Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You must choose between the ball and the sword. And if you choose the sword, you will join me in a destiny to hell. And that's what this gym is, a journey into hell.
Hey guys, thanks again for listening to SupDoc, the premier podcast about documentaries. If you love documentaries or you know someone that does, please tell them about SupDoc. I'm sure they would enjoy it and we would really appreciate it. This is your host, Pac Romaine, and today we are recapping the 2019 Netflix doc, West Side vs. The World. West Side vs. The World is a documentary about the history of the West Side Barbell Powerlifting Club and its founder, Louis Simmons. The doc is narrated by Ron Perlman and focuses on Louis's youth, his discovery of the Culver City Westside Barbell Club, his journey into powerlifting, and his accomplishments. Plus, there is a lot of powerlifting drama. I know, you're like, how could there be a lot of drama in powerlifting? Believe me, there is. The doc follows Westside from its origins to its domination through the 90s and early 2000s and to relative obscurity in the era of raw powerlifting. And we'll get into what raw powerlifting means. My guest is comedian Jesse Head. He has performed in the San Francisco Sketchfest, and you can catch him at the San Francisco and Sacramento Punchlines. And as you will hear, Jesse also got into powerlifting before turning his attention to comedy. And now, here's Jesse. I am here with comedian Jesse Head.
Hello, everyone.
There you go. That's him. That is the sultry sounds of Jesse Head. And we are talking about the Netflix documentary West Side versus the World.
About the very popular sport of powerlifting, the highly profitable, glamorous world of professional, and mostly not professional, I guess.
Or glamorous. It's not weightlifting.
Well, it's a form of weightlifting, but it's not like Olympic weightlifting. Like there's no, it's a regional, and I think a very like North American sport, sort of.
It seems North American. However, in this doc, there was like an Australian guy.
Yeah.
So kind of, is that's not considered North America.
Well, no, but it is, Australia is like the America of the rest
South
of the
Pacific
world.
Like,
a very similar culture, a lot of like redneck shit.
Right.
A lot of weird cars, highly modified cars.
Right, yeah. They are the redneck British, the British rednecks.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, are the Australians. I would have expected more Canadians to have been in this documentary.
Yeah, and there are some good Canadian powerlifters, I think, but I think they do maybe more like Olympic weightlifting, like the kind that's actually... in the Olympics that you can get a medal for.
Right.
Which powerlifting is not at all.
It's not.
No.
Wow. See, okay. Let me just pause this convo quickly to say, I know nothing about this sport.
Oh.
And so I'm going to do a lot of like, really? I didn't know. You're going to have to fill in a lot of gaps for me.
Okay. It's a weird world
that I'm less
familiar with than I used to be, but was like very immersed in for like maybe 2 years.
Okay.
Not
participatory or watching?
I did one powerlifting meet and was like, this is probably not for me.
Okay, right, yeah.
Like, it's one of those things that's like, I kind of liken it to, maybe I have a soft spot for this stuff because it's a little bit like stand-up in a way where it's something that permeates your entire life. There's not much of a payoff. It's pretty damaging in a lot of ways. Like in powerlifting, you like destroy your body. Like when you listen to these guys talk about all the injuries they've had.
Yeah.
And they sort of revel in it. They're like, yeah, I tore my pec one day and then I was back benching 2 weeks later. It's
right.
Like, you're destroying yourself, man.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
And there's a lot of nosebleeds. So the same as comedy.
Yeah.
One's cocaine.
Yeah.
One's powerlifting.
Yeah. Comedy damages you on the inside.
Yeah.
It hurts your soul.
That's
powerlifting hurts your body.
You know what's weird is how many docs we've covered wherein we've drawn parallels to comedy with them.
Sure, yeah.
Because
yeah.
of just like
how, like, for one, like, the people having this, like, dreams of, you know, grandiose dreams, and they're not, maybe weren't good enough to do it, so they kind of faked it and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. And also with parallel, like, the other thing, the parallel that I really see strongly is, like, that it's a, it is like a solitary activity. Like, you do it, when you're actually doing it, you're doing it all alone.
Oh,
but
right.
There's a very strong sense of community around it. Like, you're all these sort of alone people that hang out together all the time and, like, motivate each other. And, like, most of your close friends will eventually, if you're in that world long enough, your close friends will be from that world for the most part.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense to outsiders a lot.
Right. And the, exactly. Civilian types will wonder why you do it. Yeah. And why you put up with it. And then there's even, let's just jump around with this, because there is a guy, I stopped writing down names after a while because there were so many people in this documentary, but there's one guy who is, and it was a very touching moment. I mean, so he basically was crying and saying that he didn't go to his son's swim meets.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was bicep day.
Yeah, yeah. They were, like, yeah, that was on like Friday or whatever.
Yeah, and yeah. Yeah, so like, there are people who will, like, you know, leave their familiar responsibilities in order to, like, be part of this other family and like, wanting to live same as, and, you know, I mean, we hear that's, like, very classic entertainment story.
Yeah, totally.
You know, where, like, you know, these famous comics were just like, yeah, I had three kids, I never saw them.
Yeah, and you leave it for a fan, like, not even your sort of surrogate family is not even a nurturing or kind one. Like, they're, it's like a borderline abusive. They're still very caring in their own way. Like, there were some very touching moments in it.
Yeah, that kind of struck me as odd. I gotta say,
totally.
That it was a lot of what we're talking about right now is in the kind of the end of the doc. There is a nice arc to this doc.
Yeah,
there is like a nice solid beginning, middle, end, and near the end, everyone's grown older, and you see a lot more of the softness, and like they're even talking about how Louis Simmons actually loved everybody,
right,
in his own weird way. And did you grow up with an overbearing dad at all?
No, I had the opposite. I had like no dad around. Like, my dad was like a real cool guy, but he was just like, nah, we didn't spend a lot of time together.
I see.
And so I think that's why I sort of gravitated a lot towards like sports, and specifically this, like lifting weights and stuff, because it's like a version of masculinity, you know?
Oh, okay.
That's sort of overt and, yeah, from the media. Like, I was always into like sports, like comic books, pro wrestling, like sort of this cartoonish version of masculinity, because I didn't have a real example of it around ever. So I was like, oh, I guess that's what it is. Like,
yeah.
That's how you be a man, I guess. You scream at each other and lift up weights all the time.
Just like, so much testosterone and musky smells.
Yeah. And I think like that's part of the thing about West Side, is that it was like, Louis Simmons was very much like the father figure. It was like almost sort of like a culty environment.
Very.
And he had these like his like loud dysfunctional sons that then they would get in an argument, and that's like a sort of theme that happens over and over, is like his best lifter that he like has taken under his wing, they'll have a conflict and the guy will just leave and
you're
be
right.
like, fuck you, dad, I'm moving out.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, getting kicked out of the garage.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then some other wayward teenage son
wanders in.
Comes in and the same thing happens. He didn't like it when people got high scores.
Yeah, or too high.
Or too high.
Like, he wants them to be the best in the world, but not too good, weirdly.
That is, I mean, those are boundaries and extremes that nobody can live under. Like, you're setting people up for failure and for winning. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Such a weird mindset.
And that seems to be the only thing also. In watching this documentary, I hadn't really seen much interviews, like seen Louis Simmons talking. I'd like read articles by him and stuff. And I'm like, after watching this, like, I think he's like on the spectrum. I think he might be like a little autistic, because all he seems to care about are weightlifting movements, numbers, like people's, seems to have very little empathy, like people's emotions and like their inner lives. Just none of that seems to occur to him in any way.
No.
And he's like, well, if you're hitting your numbers, then good. But if you're not, then you gotta go.
Well, he talks about getting into fist fights and it not bothering him, because it's just all part of the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, yeah. And like them trying to injure each other. That was ongoing theme too. And it's like, don't you want these people to be healthy so that they can represent your facility?
Yeah.
But he's like, you're trying to make them lift so much weight that they hurt themselves.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. It's kind of remind me of, like, I played high school football. It has a little bit of that kind of mentality, which
is
kind of sophomoric and brutal. And if you don't bleed from your ears, you're not a real guy. You know, that's why I quit, because I was just like, I don't like being hurt.
Yeah, totally.
I don't understand why you guys are in all this pain.
Yeah, that's what, like, what I decided after my the one powerlifting meet that I did. And I it's one of those things you kind of have to have, like, a little bit of a knack for. Like, you either it has to do with, like, your tendon attachment points and your bone density and stuff that you just really can't change no matter how much exercise you do. Some people will be really good at one particular lift and not great at the other ones. And I was, like, a pretty good deadlifter and an okay squatter and, like, a pretty weak bench. But after I did a meet, and a guy was like, one of the guys from the gym that I exercised at was like, hey, man, if you have a knack, you're like a natural deadlifter. If you really, like, dedicated yourself to this, within the next, like, 4 or 5 years, you could probably be one of, like, the top 3 deadlifters in the region in your weight class. So, like, so many qualifiers, man. No, thank you. Like, I don't want to dedicate myself to something. It is, like, you're, like, eating, like, 6,000 calories a day.
Yeah, dude.
And, like, your body is, you're constantly sore. You're constantly a little bit fucked up.
Right, right. No, the amount of weight, there's so much I didn't know about this sport. And so, okay, so let's get to what powerlifting is.
Okay.
In this documentary, in the very beginning, they have a definition. Again, we're talking about West Side versus the World, which is on Netflix, currently on Netflix, and maybe some other places. But so they have a definition of powerlifting, which is squats, bench press, deadlift.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
And you can do one of the three or all three.
You do. So in a meet, you do all three, and they take your total, and that's your score, basically. It's like you lifted 2,000 pounds total, which is, like, an insane figure. But
in all three?
Yeah. The grand total of weight from each of the lifts. You just add it all up. That's your score.
And so what is deadlifting? What is that?
So basically, it's pretty simple. It's, like, the easiest, and I think the most easily understandable, and the weightlifting exercise that's translates the most to real life is, like, you basically just take a barbell with weight on it, you grab it and you pick it up off the ground. You lock out your knees and you basically lift it up to your waist.
Okay, right. And that's we've all seen that in the Olympics. There's, like, some big fat Russian guy.
Well, they don't deadlift in the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
They do. So the Olympics does snatch, which is where you take the weight off the ground and whip it up over your head, basically, in one movement.
Oh, okay, right.
And
I've
then
seen
the clean and jerk, which is where you take the weight off the floor and you whip it up to your collarbone, basically. So you're sort of holding it resting on the front of your shoulders, and then you lift it up over your head.
And they all
have
kind of masturbatory snatch and clean and jerk.
You have to scream real loud.
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
The U.S. is not good at Olympic lifting, really.
Oh, really?
It's a weird sport. It's, like, one of those things that requires almost a lifetime of dedication. And the same as powerlifting, like, it's not profitable in any way. Like, there's no professional weightlifting league you go into. So in order to do it at the level you need to be in the Olympics, it has to be subsidized by the government. So for a long time, Eastern Bloc countries were really dominant.
Right.
I think the best guy of all time is, like, an Iranian guy, and, like, Iran's very dominant in a lot of it.
Oh, right. And, like, Belarus.
Belarus. East Germany had some good guys. The Soviet Union, for sure.
Right, right. That's funny.
And the U.S. doesn't really do it. And they also pick kids out of school. You start training full time. Oh, China also really great. You start training full time when you're, like, 6, and you go to a specific, like, a sports school. And then that's your life. And then when your body breaks down, you become a coach.
Wow. And what? So, like, is it, like, early 30s when people start to break down?
I think so, yeah. I think that's the type of strength. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, I think you're pretty much done by 35. Like,
right.
That's it.
That you're over with.
Yeah, your joints are wrecked.
So this documentary could have been called Louis Simmons versus the World.
Yeah.
You know, as I was watching this, I had never heard of Louis Simmons until I watched this documentary. Didn't know anything about him. It's a pretty interesting character. He started West Side Barbell in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. On the west side of Ohio, which I guess is, like, the rough area. It's, like, the working class.
Got it.
And he's one of those dudes. He's, like, he was, like, a mason or something, or a bricklayer.
Oh, right.
That's starting when he was 11 years old, to hear him tell it. But he also doesn't seem like a guy who would lie or bullshit about anything.
No.
So I pretty much believe everything he says.
Have you ever worked for a guy like that? Have you ever had a boss that's like that?
Yeah.
Me too.
That's their entire life. Yeah. And they can't understand why anyone would want to leave early or why you would be tired in the morning.
Yeah. And why you wouldn't want to come in on Saturday.
Yeah.
They don't get it at all.
Yeah.
And he's also the kind of guy who's like, I don't understand people crying about having a girlfriend break up when there's just going to be another girl in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... Like, wow, this guy, this was the kind of guy who had a dad was like, suck it up, walk it off, get back on the site.
Yeah, totally. And I think a lot of that also, the same way that like your parts of your physicality are just inborn, I think your brain also is a little bit like there's like certain like brain chemistry stuff that's just like, yeah, you're just born that way. Like right. That's how your wiring is.
Yeah.
And everybody's wired a little different.
That's so odd to me. I guess I had kind of an autocratic father.
Yeah.
You know, I had a very stern kind of walk it off dad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so like for me, I grew up just the opposite. My whole thing was like try to avoid pain.
Yeah.
You know, try to have a good time, lift as little as possible. You know, like are you old enough? I don't know when this. I remember in like elementary school, you'd had to take a test to see what you were going to be.
Yeah, we did those, like an aptitude thing.
It was an aptitude thing, and I remember I was FBI agent.
Whoa, nice.
Or, like, mailman, because, like, I didn't want to work in an office, and I didn't want to lift more than 10 pounds.
Ah,
like,
sweet.
I was very, like, I don't like to get my hands dirty, you know?
I think I got park ranger. I also got an outside job.
Oh, yeah.
They all seem pretty optimistic, though. I don't think any of them had like a shitty job. It's like, wow, dude, you're going to be unemployed for like 15 years. Shit's not really going to work out for you, man. Sorry.
Yeah, you're going to be a drug counselor. Yeah.
After like, going through several decades of addiction yourself, you're going to eventually clean up.
Go through your own problems.
Yeah, you'll live at the rehab facility.
Right. Oh, my God. Above the rehab facility. So, so he has this place in Columbus, Ohio. And at first, it's like... Literally in his garage.
Yeah.
It's literally in his garage. And then there's a couple of like, he becomes more and more well known.
Yeah. Cause he himself was a very, very good lifter.
Right.
When he was younger, before he destroyed his back.
Right. And he broke his back like three times or something.
Yep.
According to this, plus maybe his neck and his knee.
Yeah, I think his kneecap cracked in half, and he did mess up his neck somehow.
Right, yeah. And then he has a small group of very dedicated power lifters that would come over. And then he breaks his back, and then he invents a machine.
Yeah, the reverse hyper machine.
The reverse hyper machine.
Kind of like you lay on a table sort of belly down, and your legs kind of dangle off the back, basically. So your body's bent in an L with your legs facing downward, and you lift your legs backwards by contracting your butt and your hamstrings,
which we've all seen in the gym.
Yeah, and it is a very helpful. It has helped a lot of people. It's supposed to like decompress your spine somehow, and it helps with the theory is that it gets spinal fluid in there and like helps with your discs.
Right,
and it has helped a lot of people rehab from injury.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny that he invented that to cure his own back injury.
Right.
And then used it, then sort of kept it secret.
For 15 years.
And only allowed his own guys to use it.
Yeah.
Until Larry Bird injured his back.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, you know, I should use this to help people out. And then I think that's what like funded his, like that's where a lot of his money comes from. Maybe.
Because they never talk about that. They never talked about if Larry Bird used it.
That's
true. And if he did it help him? They kind of just kind of jump over that. And then B, how does he? So at one point he stops. He has like a full on gym where there's memberships, and then he just completely forgoes membership costs.
Yeah.
I think the membership cost was only $5.
Yeah,
if I remember right from the doc. Then he foregoes all. So I thought the same thing. Like, was he personally wealthy? Doesn't seem like it.
No, I don't think so. I think he was like a union guy, and then he injured himself, and either maybe had like a pension or something, and then was running a commercial gym, which is not it's a difficult business to be successful in.
Yeah.
Like most places are just barely treading water.
Right.
But yeah, I think he just lives a very humble lifestyle.
Right.
And in an area of the country where cost of living is pretty low.
Yeah, that's true. Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. They don't really get into like his background much. We don't know much about from age one to... let's say 25 or something.
Yeah, he's a very, very private guy. Like, not many people know much about him. Like, I think he's married.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I don't think he has kids, or if he does, he never talks about it. And they're not involved in powerlifting at all.
I can't imagine being Mrs. Louis Simmons.
Oof, yeah.
Or having that guy as your dad.
Yeah, it was better that part of the documentary where he talks about, he also loves dogs very much.
Yes.
And he talks about how if you lock a dog in a trunk, it's going to be happy when you open it. And if you lock a woman in a trunk, she's going to be mad. And you can never tell if he's joking. Like,
right.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is.
My theory about, I hope Louis Simmons never listens to this. But
yeah. Oh, see, he is still alive.
Idea, yeah, he is. He's kind of a scary dude.
Dude, I don't want any of those fuckers coming
get
after me.
Get the idea that he might be a little bit racist or has like racist tendencies because all of his lifters are white dudes and he makes the thing specifically to help Larry Bird, which right. is a little bit like if Larry Bird's your favorite professional basketball player, that's a little bit of a dog whistle.
That's funny.
Not on its own. Right. It's not enough, but combined with a lot of other things, yes. It's like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, in that area of the Midwest, it's not unheard of to be racist, I guess.
It is kind of one of those areas, too, where you don't necessarily have to be, like, an actively racist person to live a fully segregated life. Like, happens that you live in an all-white neighborhood and all your friends are white and you never really leave your neighborhood, so you don't talk to black people.
Oh, yeah.
Not that you don't like them, you just don't know any.
You have zero experience.
Yeah.
Zero. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in an all-white town.
Yeah.
You know, like, that happens a lot. It's the same with having friends of people of color or gay, you know, like,
yeah, totally.
A lot of times people don't have gay friends. They've never met someone who's gay.
Yeah.
Like my brother, Steve, who finally married a woman who's in the theater program, runs a bunch of theater shows in Cincinnati,
yeah,
and has lots of gay friends. And at their reception, I saw my brother finally, like, it was pretty
The first time. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
my
amazing.
Brother was a career Marine, 30 years
old. Oh,
Marine,
yeah, totally.
And I was like watching him, like, wow. Okay. He once told me, he's like, I can't visit you in San Francisco, bro.
Yeah. Did he have that weird, like, panic where he's like, the gay men are going to grab me?
Yeah. They're going to think I'm sexy. Yeah. I'm like, no. Yeah. It's the same, like, when I go back home to Michigan, all these guys dress like lumberjacks, which is kind of the dress of a lot of gay men I see in the Castro. With, like,
yeah,
boots,
totally.
You know, and flannels and stuff.
A lot of big, very well manicured beards.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you don't realize how much you kind of resemble. But yeah, no, I wouldn't want to piss off Louis Simmons. He seems like the kind of guy that would come after you. And I mean, he went after the people that he loved anyway. So
yeah, totally.
He is the epitome of tough love.
Yeah, but in a weirdly, like, I guess, I don't know, the fact that it's all centered around exercising in the gym and getting sweaty together is also kind of like, not quite like homoerotic, but it's very like male love centered.
I don't think I've ever seen a doc more male oriented than this one, which is funny too, because there is a section about the people who are probably the most successful coming out of his gym were the women powerlifters.
Yeah, especially now. Like, West Side has kind of fallen off. And I think because it's such a sort of almost cult of personality with Louis Simmons, and he's just getting older.
Right.
And he is unable to have a successor because he drives away all of his proteges.
And he said once he retires or dies, then it's over.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah. And he's 72, I think, now.
Yeah.
So he's getting close to that.
Yeah.
And they do show some pretty, like, I guess, famous guys within this, within his structure, the mm-hmm. Matt Demmel.
Yeah, Matt Demmel, first guy to ever squat 1,000 pounds, I think.
That's insane.
Yeah, just a giant. There's some footage of him, which is the only time I've ever seen that guy even portrayed in either pictures or I've only read about him because it was like VHS days.
Right.
So there's no footage of him doing anything really.
Right.
But yeah, just a massive fucking 360 pound super heavyweight lifter.
That's to squat 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, there are cars. That's like a small car.
Yeah. It's insane.
That's insane. And some of the stories are there steroids, HGH?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They don't really talk about it in the documentary, which I was kind of surprised.
Me too.
Because a lot of those West Side guys were known for being fairly open about it. And there was a big split. I forget which power. It was like the International and the American Federation. It's like two powerlifting organizations. One was known for not really testing that much, and one was known for testing.
I see.
And so a lot higher totals in one than in the other.
Oh.
And there's sort of an ethos in the sport where it's not really looked at as cheating because it doesn't really help you lift more necessarily. It just helps you train harder and recover from injury faster.
Oh.
And so, like, yeah, I mean, and also if everyone's doing it, you're not gaining an advantage. you're just using the same equipment, sort of.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so, yeah, when they talk about the guys who, like, his heart exploded when he was 34, it's like, yeah, man, that's what happened.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, there have been a number of, like, semi-high-profile powerlifting and weightlifting deaths.
Oh, see, I'm so naive. I was like, he had a heart attack at 34. What are the chances?
Oh, man, bad luck.
I'm like, well, they didn't mention it, so it must not have been a big deal in the sport.
Yeah. Well, it's also not necessarily just the steroids. It is a very unhealthy lifestyle, which I think is one of the interesting things about it, is that it's like a healthy activity, right? Exercising,
right,
taken to a very unhealthy end.
Right.
And like, you look at a lot of the guys, the best powerlifters, they don't look like athletes. They look like they have huge bellies. They look like snowmen with arms and legs.
Yeah. Well, that's another question I had, is like, they're not trim. You're not.
No, not at all. You want to have as much weight as possible.
Uh-huh.
For like leverage reasons.
Oh, I see.
Like, yeah, it's easier, relatively easier to lift more weight if your own body weight is higher.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like, the more muscle you gain, necessarily the more weight you're going to gain.
I see. But these guys look like after doing some fucking deadlifting for a couple hours, they just go throw back a couple six packs and some pizzas.
A lot of them do, yeah, because it's just about, you have to get a crazy amount of calories in.
Right.
Like when I was into it, like when I, on heavy days, I would eat like 6,000 calories, which there's no real way to do that. There, you could do it healthily if you wanted to, but that's going to take up your entire day. And like, I need to get to work. So I would just like go to 7-Eleven. I would have like a protein shake with like berries or something, berries, cottage cheese, whole milk, protein powder, then get two 7-Eleven cinnamon roll donuts.
Nice.
And then just have like a shake in the afternoon, like a super burrito or something for lunch.
Right.
Another shake, and then like a pretty, like just a whole pizza or something for dinner.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was your weight?
I think I was 198.
Okay.
But I would cut, like at my heaviest, I was like 230-ish.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like 202 now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had like, just like no neck. Like,
right, yeah, just yeah. Just shoulders and head. Yeah. How old were you?
Let's see. I was probably 26, 27.
Okay.
Right around then.
And that was, so you were out of college?
Yeah, I was living in San Jose and like pretty depressed.
Right.
And just found this thing, like had started going back to the gym, but was having trouble motivating myself because it didn't feel like it was going towards anything. So when I found out that there was like this sort of empirical, like, oh, you try to lift more weight every time. And like that'll, oh, I'll go back because I want to do more than I did last time.
The max effort method?
Yeah,
the
yeah,
max
yeah.
effort method. And then the law of accommodation.
Yes.
Those are the two
you gotta
of the
change
things.
Up the exercises.
Is that what that is?
Like, yeah, because your body will get used to something.
Is that CrossFit?
That's part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
like
one
cross
of the big
training?
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And using different exercises and different like set and rep schemes.
Interesting.
To work the same and get better at the one movement, basically.
I don't know if for all you SupDoc listeners are listening to this, if you haven't gathered this by now, I don't work out and I rarely go to the gym. So any like gym stuff, I'm always confused about.
Yeah, it's a very weird culture, very specific.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it is very specific. And it's something that I was like, at one point they get into chains and mm-hmm. Bands.
Right, yes.
And I've seen at the gym people with chains.
Very popular now.
It is, yeah. I mean, I when I do go to the gym, I like to do a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really lift weights, but I will look over and I'll see these chains. And I've always thought, like, what? Like, can't they just put an extra weight on?
Yeah. Well, I think a major part of the chains thing is that it looks badass.
Oh, it does.
Like
you're
if
right.
you have a giant chain around your neck and you're doing an exercise, that looks cool and it makes you feel tough.
That's
and
really
it
good
might
point.
Have a psychological effect where you're able to exercise. You're a little bit better at it because you feel tough and strong.
Right.
And so then you are tough and strong if you feel that way.
Fuck yeah, dude.
But the idea is that as the chain hits the ground, it's unloading itself, right? So every chain link that hits the ground is now resting on the ground, and that's one more link you're not lifting.
Oh,
I see.
So
as the weight goes down, it gets lighter and lighter. And then as it goes up, it gets heavier and heavier because you're picking up those additional links of chain.
Oh, okay.
And a similar thing with the band, but it's like stretching and unstretching.
Right, right.
So it's heavier at the top, lighter at the bottom.
It seemed like they were like, well, before the change in the bands, I was deadlifting 700 pounds. Afterwards, 960 or something. Like they improved so much after they introduced the bands.
And I think a lot of that too is those guys have been lifting the same way for 10 years and then had one major change.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, nothing has changed for 10 years, but now this one thing has changed, and that spurs more growth and additional strength.
And you were really good at deadlifting?
Yeah, the one where you just pick the thing up off the ground.
But that not was my, squats.
I could squat pretty good. But what deadlifting for sure.
What was your max on each?
I deadlifted 560 at one point.
Oh.
And yeah, I could squat in the like low 400. I think my best squat was like 410 or something like that.
Jeez.
And then my bench was way behind. I never even got up to 300 in the bench. I like lagged way behind.
And that's because you're like not as like why
it has to do a lot of with body proportions, like with femur length. And how strong your hips are. Like, I have longish femurs and naturally big, like, quads and hamstrings. And, like, my arms aren't the right proportions for bench pressing, really. I have longer arms also and, like, kind of a shorter. I have, like, longish arms, a shortish torso, and really long femurs for my body type. So getting, for, like, a deadlift, that just means that I don't have to move the weight as far. So I can move more of it.
Oh, interesting.
And with the squat, the same thing. It doesn't have to move as far relative to the other parts of my body, if that makes sense.
Kind
of
does.
That doesn't help with bench press at all.
And for everyone who's listening, Jesse is 5'2".
Yeah.
And his arms are like 6 feet long.
Yeah. They drag on the ground while I'm walking.
It's a little gorilla-ish. Huh, that's fascinating, man.
And, well, yeah, they get into that a little bit with guy whose name I forgot, but he's a very short guy with very short arms and legs.
Oh,
who's
right.
Who's very thick also.
Super
and so consequently,
fucking thick.
He's able to lift a lot of
the
weight
guy at
and
the
he doesn't
end
have to move it very far.
Who's watching the videotapes of himself and going through the comments and stuff.
Yeah, that guy. Poor guy, man.
I
he came
know.
Along. Talk about wrong place, wrong time.
Right.
Like, if he would have been involved in powerlifting in the 80s, he would have been a fucking legend.
Right.
But now that it's fallen out of favor and people do CrossFit instead.
Well, and it's also there was video of him on social media, which they didn't have. And people are like, oh, well, you didn't go parallel with the ground with your butt and your knees, and the judges didn't,
Yeah, and it's, that part of it is pretty subjective, too, weirdly, where, like, whether or not you've completed the lift satisfactorily. I guess especially with the squat, because your femur technically is supposed to go parallel to the ground.
Right.
But you can't see where someone's femur is. You don't know where it is
that's
in
true.
There. Like, that's their skeleton.
It's
you
a subjective.
You can't see the skeleton.
Yeah, it reminds me of, did you ever see the documentary Fistful of Dollars?
No.
Fistful of Quarters, sorry. It's about...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Fistful of Quarters. It reminds me of the same, because that's a sport.
Yeah.
You know, the video gaming thing?
Yep.
Billy Mitchell and those guys, and you have that ref guy who was like, no, well, we cleared it. We made sure.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
It has that same kind of quasi-sport, like, you know?
And like with CrossFit now, you can watch CrossFit competitions on TV.
What?
And that, they show the CrossFit games on ESPN every year.
What
and
are they doing?
Like, dude, and there are so many CrossFit documentaries on Netflix right now.
Really?
There's at least 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there one that you can recommend or that you like?
I forget the name of it. I think it's called, it's about this guy Rich Froming, I think is the guy's name. There's one called Redeemed and Dominant that's about this one particular guy who's like the Michael Jordan of CrossFit.
Huh.
And has had a falling out with the inventor of CrossFit because the champion guy kind of does it his own way, and he doesn't do it the way the inventor guy thinks it should be done. But then he just comes and wins every
time.
That's
just a classic tale.
It is,
I mean, it's the same thing in here.
Yeah, totally.
Well, we had your boy Chuck
Vogelfull. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was one of the guys when I was starting to get into lifting that was like the guy. And just like this enormous, scary man.
Yeah.
With a very small-looking head, but I think it's just because his body is so huge.
Right. It reminds me of the Hanna-Barbera chicken. There was always the one strong chicken and the huge chest and the small head.
Yep, totally.
Yeah. That guy and the little tiny chicken legs.
And he always wore a flame beanie when he lifted, which is so gross. Like a lot of the ways that these, like the lifters dress, because you want to keep yourself warm. Like you want to keep as much warmth into your joints and muscles as possible so you don't get injured. But you're so sweaty. It just feels so fucking gross.
Yeah.
That was one of the other things that really got me about competitive lifting was like you wrap your knees up so tight. It's really uncomfortable and gross feeling to do.
Yeah.
You like slather up with like Tiger Balm or an equivalent thing. So you're just sweating your ass off under there. Everything's itchy.
To compete or just to work out?
Both.
Oh,
like for like max effort workouts, you would do it. A similar thing because you want to train the way that you're eventually going to lift. Not every time, but every once in a while.
Oh, interesting. Like, so, okay, this is a great segue to an area of the doc I just could not wrap my head around,
yeah.
which was the gear thing. The max ply, the multi-ply, I don't understand why that helped.
Yeah, I never got that far into it either. I lifted raw exclusively.
Oh, you did?
But I did understand how it works, and I was actively like, oh, I don't want to do that. And okay. I have like squatted in a squat suit and benched in a bench shirt before.
Yeah.
And again, horribly uncomfortable. It feels terrible.
They look super uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very, like you see the bench press shirts. So the idea behind all of the gear is that the sort of the rigidity of the fabric resists the weight, basically. So as you're going down into a squat, the squat suit is resisting stretching, and then it wants to rebound and return to its natural form, so it helps you like spring out of it.
Oh.
So it's kind of like, it acts like kind of like a rubber band, basically.
Oh, interesting.
But it's helping you. And the same with the bench press shirts, like it resists going down and then assists you on the way back up.
Oh, well, that much so that people are actually adding that much more weight to their lifts?
Yeah, like super thick. They use like super thick denim. So think about putting on like two pairs of really tight jeans.
Oh, wow.
And then trying to get down into a squat.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to naturally, but if you put weight on you, if you use weight to assist you getting down into it, you'll be able to. And then you'll be able to spring back up out of it much faster.
Oh.
Because the fabric is trying to get back to where it wants to be, basically.
Interesting. I was trying to figure out what the fuck they were talking about. It looks like just like spandex.
It does, yeah, but it's thick. It's like canvas. It's canvas or
weird.
Denim.
So that's like, hot, too.
Yeah, it's like a wrestling singlet, but it's made of this very thick, thick canvas, and it just absolutely crushes your balls. It's the worst.
Oh,
it's
awful. Yeah. Speaking of singlets, I grew up in Coldwater, Michigan, where Dan Severin's from.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And Dan was our wrestling coach in high school.
Whoa, really?
So I wrestled, and he was our coach.
Oh, that's awesome.
But this was before Ultimate Fighting was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
you never heard about it. And sometimes he'd come to like practice and he'd have a black eye,
yeah,
you know, or he'd have like a cauliflower ear, and we'd be like, what happened, coach? And he's like, nothing, just in the meet.
Yeah, dude, I had a similar thing in middle school. Our wrestling coach, Ed Hart, was the wrestling coach for the Schultz brothers, the guys they made the Foxcatcher documentary
right,
about.
Right.
And it was the nice one, the Mark Ruffalo one. Dave, I think Dave was the nice brother and Mark was the crazy brother. Maybe it was vice versa, though. But he would come back. They were from the town that I went to middle school in.
In Pennsylvania?
I grew up on the peninsula in Palo Alto.
Oh.
And lived in Kansas till I was 11 and then moved to Palo Alto when I was 11.
Oh, okay.
When I was 12. And so they would come back and do like wrestling camps at our middle school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's another example of a weird fringe sport.
Yeah.
So physically taxing so financially unrewarding.
Oh, yeah.
That it doesn't
horribly
make sense.
Horribly unrewarding.
Yeah. Why would anyone dedicate their life to that? It's like, well, it's because you love it.
Yeah.
Like, there's it's an illogical thing to do.
Right. In order to be good at it, you have to dig deep into some pain.
Yeah. It's
because,
brutal.
Like, I wrestled for a couple years, and in order for me to win my match, I would have to think about my older brothers and how much they tormented me.
Yeah.
In order for me to get, like, a good lock on somebody and just, like, take them down.
Yeah.
Because if I was in a good mood, I would never win, ever. I would just be like, well, okay.
I almost wrestled in middle school, and then I went to like 2 weeks of wrestling practice. I was like, oh yeah, I don't want to do this, man.
Yeah,
this is too much.
It's way too much.
Too exhausting.
And then like when you're on the mat, and then I was, you know, like I said, if I was in like even a decent mood and I saw this guy walk up who looked like he was pissed at the world, I'm just like,
yeah,
fuck, he's going to just destroy me.
Yeah.
I didn't have it. I didn't have that inner fucking fire you need.
I don't think anybody does, and I don't think it's a healthy thing
Chuck,
to have. Yeah, right.
Chuck did.
Yeah.
That guy looked fucking nuts,
man. The footage of them in the meets when they come up and they're like screaming and like slapping each other.
Yeah.
And then squatting, and then his nose starts bleeding.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Truly insane. It's like unpleasant to watch.
Yeah.
Which is why I can understand why it never took off as like a spectator sport. They didn't really like
imagine televise
it.
And what are they
it.
All like in some weird convention center in Dayton?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they have the meets
in
like gymnasiums or in like in convention centers.
Yeah. That looked like there's a couple convention halls or something that they're in. And
they set up the equipment. And
a lot of chalk.
Yeah, chalk is a huge part of the sport. Like a lot of chalk all over your hands. You put it on your back.
Yeah.
You put it on your front.
A lot of front chalk going on. Lord have mercy. I love it because it's, I love like fringy shit, you know? Yeah. I was about to compare it to like flat earth stuff.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That documentary, which is just like, there's just this fringe component that you wouldn't even know about it unless you saw a doc about it or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like I really love that kind of stuff because it's like, what is the mindset? Is it that people, like, what are some themes to this stuff? I like to talk about themes. Is it that, like, most of these people probably didn't have a strong family, and then that's what they're searching for?
Yeah, I think it's either people searching for something or trying to get away from something. Like, they either have, like no family or a shitty family, or they're trying to, like, quiet some inner demons that they're exercising through this activity.
Right.
It's always like with the powerlifting stuff, it's almost like a masochistic pursuit where it's like, yeah, the pain part is good because then afterwards you're not in pain anymore. And
right.
You feel good because you don't feel bad.
Right.
And you're not able to self-soothe in that way.
It's very reptilian, man. Like,
yeah.
I've never, ever had that in my brain. I mean, I played sports. I played basketball and football and wrestling, but I never had the, like, no pain, no gain kind of thing.
Yeah.
My thing was, like, if you just kind of middle your way through everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, hopefully you can do better.
Yeah. And with weightlifting, it's different than, I think, team sports where you're working together with a group of people and you're following strategy and steps to accumulate points and win the game. Like, it's more, I think it's more zen-like than that where, like, the act itself is the reward, like doing it.
Right.
There's no reward at the end. The actual doing it is the reward. Like this, you know, fucking hitting your goal of squatting 600 pounds.
Right.
That is the point. And
right.
Doing it is the point of doing it.
Right. And not getting adulation from your friends that you're in a group with or an audience.
Yeah.
Because it's like almost like long distance running or something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like I want to run 24 miles today.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. That's very that's a very interesting pursuit.
And you don't celebrate after you did it. Like if you watch the guys after they complete a lift, like set a world record, they just kind of go, one time. And then they just go sit quietly in the locker room for a while.
Right.
And then they maybe go out and have some beers that night.
Right. Well, there is the guy that pushes people.
That's true. Yeah.
That's our boy we were talking about.
Yeah, I wish I could remember his name. He was like after my time. And so, yeah, I don't, even though he's the best, again, he's the best in the world at this thing that I was immersed in for a couple of years. And I don't remember his first and last name.
Right.
That's how fringe this thing is.
And it's pretty cool because in the doc, they do show him like lifting weights at like 19. He showed up real young and people were like taking him under his wing, which meant that they screamed at him.
Yeah.
And like told him he was a pussy.
And didn't like him because he was sort of smart and quick-witted and would talk shit right back to him.
Right.
But then he was also very good at the thing.
Yeah.
And in that world, like all that really what matters the most is how much weight you can lift.
Right.
And if somebody can lift the most weight, then they could just kind of do whatever they want. Otherwise, you can't really tell them shit.
Yeah, they're kings.
Yeah, there's no getting mad at them.
Yeah. And so again, we'll go back to your boy Chuck Vogelpohl, who was so good at everything, he would tell people, no, we're not doing heavy leg days. We're doing this today. And people are like, well, we're supposed to be doing, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm the best at this, and I'm going to tell everybody what to do.
Yeah, and he was the guy that would, like, sort of bully people out of the gym
and tell
them they had to leave if they weren't strong enough.
Oh, right. Yeah, and then, so Louis would have to kick people out of the gym because this guy didn't like him.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the classic Shakespearean, they have the split.
Yeah.
And then he goes and starts his own thing.
Yep.
Chuck starts his own weightlifting group or whatever it is. And also, what you find out about this doc, too, there's an AM group and a PM group even within.
Yeah. That part was crazy, right?
Yes,
They're working out at the same facility and they, like, hate each other.
Right. And if you were part of this group, that meant you hated Louis and this group. And it's so weird.
Yeah.
There's so much division.
Yeah.
It's really such a strange.
And they were mad at the guy. They hated the guy who ran the facility that they were working out at, that they had specifically come to work out at. Because it's like, you know, they got weights everywhere. And
right.
You could just go to a different gym and work out there if you wanted to. But somehow you have to keep coming back to this place, even though you hate the guy who runs it and everything about it. And
right.
Maybe that's motivational. in a way that you're going to show him.
I guess
that
so.
You're gonna, you need that sort of adversity.
Some people need a pat on the back. Other people need to be told that they suck.
I think that would have. I think the Louis Simmons Chuck Vogelfull thing maybe could have been avoided if just once Louis Simmons would have been like, "Man, you're the best lifter here," and maybe one day this could all be yours.
Yeah, yeah.
But also that could have backfired on him because maybe it's like a pack of wolves where once the dominant alpha shows one sign of weakness, everybody turns on him,
right?
And he's fucking done for.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows?
I would think the latter. I think the pack would fucking pounce.
Yeah.
If they saw that, they'd be like, "You're." Pussy. Like, what's next? We're gonna bring roses to workouts. Yeah. And yeah,
and they do allude to another gym where the guy was a nicer person,
right?
And then his lifters started getting really good. They had different techniques,
right?
But then they started sort of competing for the top spots at the local meets.
Yeah,
so it's not the way that Louis Simmons does it is not necessarily the way to do it, but for like a solid decade it was like that was the only game in town somehow.
Right Yeah, and they show also trainers for different colleges and sports teams that come a knocking because they're like, you know, they see the results that Louis's getting. So he worked with the Green Bay Packers Chicago Bears and some baseball guys.
Yeah. That's kind of how I found out about Louis Simmons and Westside. It was one of my friends was getting back into lifting weights, and I was like, "Hey, could you? I'm having trouble motivating myself to do this, but I know that I should start doing some kind of exercise. So, like, what do you think?" And he was like, "Oh, look at this guy's website." And it was this guy named Joe DeFranco, who was like an athletic trainer who was known for taking pretty good athletes and getting them to like the top level. He would take guys who were like pretty good in college, but not going to go pro, but who were very motivated, and he would get them to like get drafted in like the later rounds of the draft. So he'd take people that weren't physical prodigies and make them lift weights and exercise and get them to be able to be in sort of like the lower echelon of the top level of their sport.
Right.
So that really appealed to me. And it turns out he was using a lot of like West Side principles.
Oh, okay.
And on his website, he had like a workout template that was like called, I think it was called West Side for Skinny Bastards.
Ah.
It was specifically for like athletes like over the summer to get better at
Balk
their thing.
Up.
And I was like, okay, I could use that and I could follow this template. And then I was like, what is this whole West Side thing all about?
Oh,
and
interesting.
And then from there I learned about, Louis Simmons and all these guys.
It reminds me of stuff like you would see in like the back of like Rolling Stone magazine, you know, like
yeah, totally.
Like they would show like a skinny guy getting beat up, and then
yeah, the Charles Atlas method, yeah, the dynamic tension,
yeah, exactly. Then you just go bulk up, and then you go kick the guy's ass on the beach.
Yeah, you're not getting sand kicked in your face anymore,
right? No, not you, not these pencil neck geeks. Yeah, that it's very interesting. I mean, they show Louis kind of like in the middle of the, like, basically the second act of this documentary. People are starting to leave. There's other gyms that are opening up. His prestige isn't what it used to be, you know. And then his star players or whatever leave because of all kinds of different reasons.
Yeah.
And then he gets, what's the word? He gets taunted.
Yep.
By some young kid, and he comes back on his horse.
Yeah.
And he starts lifting again. He comes out of retirement.
Which is crazy.
It is insane.
70 years after like two back surgeries for the same shattered vertebrae and a busted kneecap, and he just comes back and starts doing it again.
And he was like 65, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
And he just starts lifting again. Yeah. And like he and his like horrible tattoos.
Oh, man, those are some bad ones.
Those are some nasty tattoos.
And when they show him in his younger days, he didn't have the shitty tattoos.
That's
right. So he had to get a bunch of shitty tattoos between the ages of like 40 and 60.
Yeah, that's...
And you would think he would know people who could give him good tattoos.
No.
But yeah,
apparently
just some real bad.
Yeah, those are some shitty tattoos. Sorry, Louis, but you got some shitty tattoos,
I'm
buddy.
Sure he knows it. He seems like at least a reasonably self-aware guy.
Yeah. As much as someone like that can be reasonably self-aware, so he gets out of retirement and he starts lifting again and gets close to whatever he wants to do.
Yeah,
because he was a squatter, right? That seemed to be his main thing.
Yeah, he was a big squat guy.
Yeah, is it a squat? Isn't squatter not the term?
I don't know. know. I don't know that there is a particular term. You would say, yeah, you would say someone's a strong squatter.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just sounds weird.
Yeah,
it does. The word sounds a little weird.
Like they're occupying an apartment that they're that's supposed to be in.
Stop squatting under my bench. So, he comes back and tries to get back into the sport and then breaks his back again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think he shattered his knee for the last time.
Yeah, I think
time.
The kneecap was the last one.
Right. And then he was just like despondent and like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
This is it for me. And then they show like there's like this new generation where we get into the guy that we can't remember. I think it was Max for some reason.
Sounds right.
I have the name Max in my head. And he starts like coming out and doing well, but like the sport itself is in decline.
Yeah, because it's not fun to watch really.
No.
Especially if you don't really... I don't know. I guess you do understand that what like 800 pounds is, and like that's a crazy amount of weight. But that guy's lifting up 800 pounds. Like, so what?
Right.
And they're not. There are other forms. Like, I think CrossFit is more popular because the people who do it look like athletes. Like, they have a very pleasing aesthetic. Like, they're super ripped, and it makes sense. You're like, that super ripped guy is like doing a bunch of pull-ups. Like, that's
what I want to do.
Totally. But you see the power lifters, you're like, I would never want to look like that. Like, that looks uncomfortable.
Yeah, they look like
they
live in the hinterland of Canada and just eat salmon and go bear hunting.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the guys that are at the top, like the super heavyweights, it's a very uncomfortable life. Like one of the guys in Dave Tate, who was one of Louis Simmons' sort of proteges, who then also had a falling out with him and started his own thing. But he did a series of articles about going from being a super heavyweight power lifter and like retiring from that because it was just so physically uncomfortable. Like you get sweaty tying your shoes, snore, you can't sleep because sleep apnea.
They talk about sleep apnea.
Yeah. And just carrying that amount of weight is like unhealthy.
Yeah.
And then he stopped.
Well, and then the guy that, it's really weird to see a couple of them because you see one guy who's real, he's older, he's super skinny.
Oh, yeah, and, Bob.
And you're like, how could have he ever have been, and then they show the Australian kid who looks very trim now, but he was like, I was at 340 and thinking about getting rid of, and then Louis's like, can you get to 380?
Yeah.
If you
yeah.
get to 380, you know.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, I don't want to get to 380, you know, like. And now he looks very trim.
Yeah, and there's no real healthy way to do that, I don't think. Even if you are extremely conscientious about your food intake and all that, like you just can't.
The
human body's not meant to be that much.
Yeah, I mean, some of these cats look like they're real tall, too. So, like, you add height to that, and that seems very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and bad for your lifespan, too.
Yeah,
as we mentioned before with old Matt Dimmel.
Well, and then Matt Dimmel, I guess he died from a heroin overdose. But
Yeah. And there have been some guys, like, I can't remember their names, but there's, like, one of the world's best bench pressers. His heart just stopped one day.
Jeez.
And they don't talk about it, but I'm sure it's like with pro wrestlers where it's like, this guy just had a heart attack. It's your heart's a muscle and you've been doing these drugs that tax your muscles.
See, I didn't know when steroids and I don't know anything about that stuff. So I don't know when that shit was like invented, like when athletes started using steroids and HGH.
Yeah,
and
I don't know either. I think it became, I know the Eastern Bloc countries in like the late 70s, that was when people I think when the public became aware of it.
Interesting.
Because I remember there was a big, like East Germany was like a big, I mostly remember it from comedy stuff and from sort of what are, in retrospect, not great jokes about the East German women's athletes being men also.
With mustaches. The Simpsons did a lot of that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from taking testosterone, probably. Right.
Interesting.
And I think there are now, there's in the like fitness and weightlifting and powerlifting communities, there's a movement towards bringing that shit out into the light just to keep kids from getting into it and getting into it in a way that's more harmful than it needs to be. Because there are guys who are advocates for safe use of steroids. And there's plenty of like a lot of the stuff that they call it like that's like anti-aging or like testosterone replacement is just code for you're doing steroids.
Oh, right.
But they call it something different because it has such a negative association now.
Right.
And I think there are ways to do it in smaller dosages and like more monitored that are like healthy and not, or at least not going to kill you, you know,
right.
Like it's not going to fuck you up.
We just covered Screwball with Ben Kalina and about the Anthony Bosch and the, his little thing in South Florida where he knew like the micro doses to get around testing and you know.
Yeah. So. There's another one about the guy, the Soviet guy. Who like had to go on the run because he had all the secrets.
Right. That's a great documentary.
But I think they also had like a bunch of spy shit going on where they would slip urine samples in and like hide it under a false tile in the wall or something
right.
like that.
Of course. Yeah.
But it's such an advantage. Like it's
a huge advantage.
Like why wouldn't you? Like if there was like a drug that you could take that would make you empirically 30% better at comedy.
Right.
Like, I'd do that.
It's called alcohol.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. 30% more laughs. You get paid 30% more. Yeah. You potentially get paid way more.
Yeah.
Like, in the case of like a Barry Bonds guy, it's like, oh, that's the difference between making $4 million a year and $40 million a year.
And
like,
Hall of Fame.
Shit. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, that's what these cats want, you know, is like, I mean, look at A-Rod. I mean, they just want a little bit of an advantage. And they're like, I want what Manny Ramirez, like he went from like the gutter to, you know, like hitting champion. And he's like, I want that.
Yeah, why not?
And I have millions of dollars to give you.
And the idea that it's cheating, I also don't agree with.
Okay.
People call it that. But to me, like cheating means it makes you, I don't know, it allows you to like reduce the amount of effort you would have to use to achieve the same or better results. But for the most part, steroids allow you to work even harder. So, like, I don't think the cheating is necessarily the right word.
See, you know? I see it the same way as you do. Mm-hmm. However, I see it as this is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it matter? It's not, it's all for entertainment reasons. It's the same thing. Would you not want comedians to have a drink?
Yeah,
would you
totally.
Should all tennis players wear the same shoes?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's entertainment. Like, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah, when people get all high and mighty about ethics in sports, it always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, then shouldn't maybe the owner be dividing the profits up a little
Amen.
More evenly amongst his employees?
Should we be paying college players?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I know. I completely agree.
Should
I'm
we
just
be
like,
forcing people to risk their health for free?
Well, that's classically American, which is like, this is moral, this is not.
Yeah.
This is moral, this is not. We pick and choose our morality in this country, you know, all the fucking time. And I agree. I feel like if you can find a way to get better or not, then do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But now they have like balls that are lighter.
Yeah, that is weird.
They move the infield in and out at a whim, apparently, which I didn't know you could do in baseball.
That is one of the crazy things about baseball is that the stadiums are within like there's like a certain tolerance built in where it can be anywhere between this size and this size.
Yeah.
And
well, they're like, talking right now. They're talking about the Giants at AT&T Park and moving the wall in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For more home runs and more fun?
Because it's not a hitter's park.
Yeah.
It's like a defensive park, I guess. Like, so you can just do. So what happens to all the hits that happened 6 years ago?
Yeah, true.
Like, are there asterisks next to the? I mean, that's what I mean. It's like it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like in football, they just change the rules to make it so that there's more touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, or in basketball, you can't hand check anymore.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, well, then what's the difference?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't.
And then, like, when they do the safety stuff in football, too, it's like, well, if you want these guys to be really safe, we should just retire. Everyone should just retire and give them, like, a pension right now.
Dude,
like,
I don't think football's going to be around in 20 years.
I kind of don't either, or at least not in a recognizable form.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, Andrew Luck shocked everybody by making a very smart move.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. He woke up that morning and was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's tired of the pain, has a couple $150 million in the bank.
Yeah.
You know?
Why keep doing it?
Why? It makes no sense.
Yeah. And if you, even if you look back, like, this is probably only like 5 or 6 years ago when they would have the, I vividly remember, you could probably still find it on YouTube, the jacked up segments that they would do on the NFL. It was just helmet to helmet hits. It was just guys getting collision, getting concussions.
Up. Yeah.
And both the announcers would just sort of elatedly be
clap
like, you got jacked up. It was like played for laughs.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
No, just.
It just took 4 years off this guy's life.
I think that's what happened in Antonio Brown, that hit he got when he was with the Steelers. He got knocked out in the air.
Yeah.
He was knocked out. And after that, I don't think he was ever the same.
Yeah.
Like, now Antonio Brown's cry.
Yeah, and he refuses to wear a different helmet because he likes the one that...
Yeah, he wants the one that they outlawed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
The whole thing is nuts.
And then, those are guys who are getting paid insane amounts of money to do it.
Yes.
And then there are guys who are doing, like, the more fringe sports who are doing this for free.
Right.
Or for a loss.
Mostly a loss.
Like, I know, go back to the steroid stuff, like, I know guys who are still like competitive power lifters, but in like amateur things where you pay an entry fee and there's maybe some prize money. Like if you're first place overall in your division, you get like $1,500 or something, but that doesn't cover your weekend trip. And those guys do steroids and like pay for them out of pocket. And that shit's not cheap. It's like $800 to $1,200 for like an 6 to 8 week cycle of like reputable, like good.
What happens when
it's
you stop
expensive.
Taking steroids?
Well, you kind of taper
do you
off. You do, yeah. You lose a little bit of the. I think it depends, but like, yeah, you lose some of the stuff, but some of it sticks with you, like because it is you are like making real like muscular and like connective tissue adaptations,
right? Yeah, it's not like when you order a subscription to something where you're like, oh, no, you didn't pay for it.
We're
taking it back. That would suck. Because then Barry Bonds would have looked skinny again.
Yeah, I know. His head would have been back to the same size.
Back to normal size.
I wonder if it does go back. I haven't seen a picture of him recently.
He looks thinner, but I mean, it's kind of bulky.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Oh,
this
documentary. Shit, anytime.
Thank you for bringing this. Thanks for sitting. I want to cover for SupDoc listeners there. I do want to talk for a minute how I met you.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, Jesse is a comedian here in the Bay Area. About 5 years ago, I don't know if you remember this, but I have a production company called Free Dirt Media.
I do remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've had it for years in this town in San Francisco. And our logo is a wheelbarrow.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I started this in Michigan before I even moved here in the early or in the mid 90s. So then there's a group of complete marina ass douchebags that started a company called Free Dirt Apparel. With a logo that was basically my wheelbarrow.
Oh, fuck, of course.
Yeah.
Of course it's a clothing line, too.
It's a horrible clothing line. And one of the original t-shirts they had was a, like, Che Guevara or, like, a Hispanic dude in a sombrero.
Yeah.
And it was, said, oh, shit, what was it? What did it say? It was, like, oh, I don't remember. It had some horribly racist title to it.
It's like Viva La Brunch or some shit. Gross.
Yes, exactly. No, it was what is it when you get
Dirty Sanchez.
Ah! It said Dirty Sanchez on it with a guy in a sombrero. And it was just horrible.
Yeah.
And the picture of this company was just like all white bros. And so I contacted them. And I was like, hey, you took my name. You took my logo. Can you at least like change it up a little bit? And they were like, fuck you, you old fucking piece of shit.
Of course.
One of them literally said, we're the new guard of San Francisco. So like, just beware, we're taking over. And so I put this on social media. And Jesse, who's here as my guest, came to my defense. And you went after them a little bit.
Yeah, I love horsing around online. That's
there you go.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Especially if it's for a good cause. Yes. And if it's against some assholes.
And you were very good at it to the point where they stopped letting there be comments on their Twitter page and they disabled comments on their Facebook page as well. And now I am proud to say that after researching even this morning about this, they are no longer in business.
Ah, we did it, man.
We did.
We took them down.
So thank you, Jesse.
Oh, dude. Anytime.
I appreciate it. And thank you for coming on SupDoc and bringing West Side Barbell, West Side versus the World. To us. And
yeah, love to, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, buddy. Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com, recapping reality since 2015. Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show is engineered by Will Scovel. For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to the show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast. And if you want to help us out in other ways, please just share the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Find out more about Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on our website. SupDoc is by Doc fans for Doc fans. So if you want to advertise with us, you got a film or opinions, just hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.